Red Eye is a program of alternative politics and culture which broadcasts live from 9 until noon every Saturday morning on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM and around the world at cooperadio.org. Here is Mordecai Breenberg.
Marwan Hassan is an Ottawa-based writer of fiction and nonfiction. His first book was two novellas titled The Confusion of Stones, and after that he published a novel, The Memory Garden of Miguel Carranza. He's written a demographic analysis of empires. He's written a collection of linked vignettes titled Transfer, and another called Dust Numbers. And in his latest just published book, he's switched style. He's now written a murder mystery. It's called No Patent. And Kamyar Chai is a Vancouver-based playwright, producer, and actor. Most recently, he produced the musical adaptation of Dostoevsky's Crime and Punishment. He's performed in theaters across Canada, The Adventures of Ali Ali and the Axes of Evil. This was a very well-received and rollicking political satire of our current international predicament. And he also co-wrote the play with Marcus Youssef and Guillermo Verdicchia, and that play now too is available in book form, published by Talon Books. Now Kamyar has joined me in the studio to discuss a little bit and mainly read from the latest book by Marwan Hassan. Good morning, Kamyar.
Good morning, Mort.
Last time you were in the studio, you read a short vignette from these linked vignettes of a very short book called Transferred, and now you're going to read from Lost Patent. Is that quite a shifting of gears?
It is, actually. I was quite surprised by the difference in tone. Always Marwan's intelligence always comes through in his writing, but to go from a fairly, and I mean this in a positive way, intellectual love of playing with language, for instance, and ideas, to taking that style and then switching to what essentially is a very intelligent crime drama was a bit of a switch.
Yeah, I don't know what sequence he's actually written these things in, because he told me he's had a number. He's got about six books written that he's constantly looking for publishers for. So it's hard to tell which came first by the date of publication.
Right.
But it's certainly a great variety.
Absolutely.
I'm wondering if you could just briefly sort of give us a sense. Obviously, we don't want to reveal who did what.
Yes.
But a sense of the story, the setting of this lost patent.
Well, the lost patent is the style is a classic crime drama. So all of the markers that one would look for are there. And obviously, Marwan knows his crime dramas. And our protagonist is Alec Knight, who is works for a private investigation firm called Lajoie Chang, which is based in Ottawa. Now, that's the interesting thing. It's based in Ottawa, and Marwan's actually made Ottawa an interesting and mysterious town, which is an achievement in itself. But Alec is the classic wizened old PI. Not that old, but wizened definitely. And he's very good at what he does, and his firm gets hired by a large pharmaceutical company who are in search of a briefcase. There's another classic marker in a crime drama that have been stolen from them, and this sets him off on this very intriguing journey. He also meets a Somali doctor by the name of Salma Bar, whose brother was murdered, and the police have written off this murder as a drug overdose, and she's very suspicious. And these two stories eventually intertwine, of course, in a very smart way. And that's basically the gist of it, without giving away too much.
Right. He still does a fair bit of wordplay, I found, in this, and sort of kind of penetrating comment, even though the pace is certainly fast and not as intense and condensed as some of his earlier writing.
Absolutely, that's what makes it a little bit more than just a crime drama. It's very—he ties in a lot of political ideas and does so with great dexterity with his use of language.
You have some readings you've chosen from this.
Yes.
Perhaps you could introduce the first one.
Well, the first one is actually right from the very opening of the book, chapter one, right from the very beginning. I thought I'd read this because the descriptive quality is also very nice, and how he tries to capture the character of the city that Alec Knight lives in this case being Ottawa. And it's also a good example of how he sets up characters. So it's the setup of the novel. I drove north on Bronson Avenue. turned right onto Somerset and headed east to Elgin Street and Confederation Square. I circled round the square and then turned left on Sussex Drive and zipped past the USA Embassy within requisite gazing distance of Parliament Hill. Sussex became Rockcliffe Parkway and took me into the village of Rockcliffe. I pulled up at the address that Georges Lejoie had given me. It was a smooth, restrained stone house, more than 100 years old, with a copper roof turned verdigris green. The leaded glass windows revealed the incandescence of glass blowing. The tinted green panes were rippled with watermarks. The walk was made with cut Ottawa limestone. Cheap was not its name. Lejoie Chang Associates had gotten the referral from the law firm of Collingwood Hurley, Mountain, Pylon, and Kidd. It had come directly from Claude Pylon, the son of one of the firm's founding partners, to Georges Lejoie. Lejoie had given me the case with that fine assurance, no pushiness, just that turn of phrase, banal but emphatic, "I'm sure you'll do well by this," which meant, "Don't mess it up with this client." I rang the doorbell. A butler opened the door, took the measure of my suit, and said hello in English. I didn't feign any French, not even bonjour. "Could you please tell Mr. Barrett that Alec Knight from Lejoie Chang Associates is here to see him?" "One moment, please." He left me standing in the hall as if he had been given word to expect me, but would just as soon as I left. I considered the place. Smooth money here, no rumples in the Persian carpet. It was old without a trace of aniline dye rotting the wool fabric. Definitely pre-1800. No 19th century knockoff for the European market. I could scoff it and make more on it at auction than I would in 10 years at Lejoie Chang, but that was not my business. I'd once traced a guy dealing euphemistically in used rugs. "My man, we're speaking of rugs, not carpets," he chastised me. The real stuff was hanging on the hand-painted wallpaper. Colville, A.Y. Jackson, and Tom Thompson, and another guy going by nothing but last names, Paterson Ewan. The butler reappeared and took me to a study of the hallway. As I entered, a slim blonde woman dressed in woolen slacks and a silk blouse slipped by. I had a moment of recognition, but it was blurred. Then her face came back into focus with the realization that I'd seen photographs of her in The Citizen a half dozen times. Most recently, she was photographed wearing a fine necklace around her sleek neck and smooth, naked shoulders, her cunning, slim body wrapped in a take-me-off gown at a charity ball and a Sussex Drive swan dive with all the unimpeachables. "Hello, Mr. Knight." Georges Lejoie sent me over. "Raymond Barrett, pleasure." He gripped my hand. I had a second moment of recognition. Like his wife, who was about 15 years younger than he, Barrett looked older in person. His face had that sag that photos sometimes capture. At 55, his body had a lean, drawn thinness brought on by racquetball and tennis. "Please sit down, Mr. Knight." I sat, less by choice than command. Barrett was not the sort of man you'd disagree with. He could have said, "Please, have some lamb's brains," and guests at his dinner table, even confirmed vegetarians, would have scooped them out and eaten them. I had long known the name Barrett. Barrett, just that simple name on any number of medical instruments, thermometers, and tongue depressors, and a dozen wonder drugs that could do anything from clean out your intestines to detox your brains after a binge. Barrett Osler of Barrett Osler Medical. Barrett Osler Medical Instruments. Raymond Barrett, the whiz guy of genetics who had added new money to the old money of his grandfather and stopped his father from squandering one of the country's biggest medical fortunes, was cloning coin.
Thank you for that. The detective is a very obviously knowledgeable person, yet he kind of plays anti-intellectual when he later gets in contact with scientists and people who seem to be philosophically pretentious.
Absolutely. He's always undercutting himself, and that's his way of passive-aggressive way of undercutting them. But he really doesn't has, I think he has a disdain for all of them, but he tries to keep an emotional distance from his disdain because he's also professional.
Have you heard of other mysteries that have been set in Ottawa?
You know, I have to say this is the first, especially for a modern one, which was quite surprising, and it was nice actually, because it really gave a different life to the city than I ever imagined it would have.
Marwan being of Lebanese ancestry, and a lot of his other writing deals with the world as seen by the immigrant. But here he's really situating himself in the city where he has grown up, and actually is portraying that city as you describe the streets and the ambience there, and the characters come from that setting.
Absolutely, and there's a lot of different characters. You get everything from the politicians and the aristocracy and the French Canadians, but you also get the trailer park boys, and you get the immigrant faction as well. So it's a really interesting and clear view of a Canadian society living in a Canadian city.
With the nasty monopoly pharmaceuticals and the victimized immigrants.
That's right, yes.
Does the play, does the story have theatrical qualities? Could you see this as a movie? Could you see this as a stage production?
Well, right off the bat, definitely as a movie. It could easily transfer into a movie. All the elements are there, and there's a lot of dialogue. It reminds me of a movie I saw recently. I told you this before, a Stephen Frears movie called Dirty Pretty Things, which is interesting. It's got the same feel to it, and it's set in London. The protagonist is different. The protagonist is an African immigrant from the African continent, but it deals with human organ transplants and sales of human organs. So it had very, very interesting similarities, and so I could definitely see it as a film. It could be a theater piece as well. It would take more work. The dialogue, and this is a very small quibble, it could be that I'm not used to it. Sometimes it's very clever, the dialogue between, and all of the characters seem to have a very clever quality about them. And I think that would take a little bit of work translating to the stage, because we'd have to decide, well, is it, how stylized is it, for instance? And in terms of the realistic settings, it would be very difficult to capture. He really goes through to different locations, which give a real character to the book. Much in the same way, actually, that Dostoevsky gives character to St. Petersburg and describes all the cities in this recent play that we did. So I'm sure we'd be able to do it, but it would be a bit more of a challenge. I think film, it really lends itself to.
Could you read one more selection from it?
Yes, I have a shorter selection, and this is... Okay, let me just find it here. This is where he meets a... you know what? It's going to explain itself. I'll just read it. I phoned up Paul Leong Kung. He was beyond compromise. He was firm without being dogmatic. He was convinced that the heroin went into the guy's body when he was alive, but in a state of unconsciousness. Someone else had to pump the needle. It was the heroin that killed him. And without the overdose, he would have survived whatever fight he had been in if the bruises were a result of a fight. He couldn't move on it. The other needle marks were inconsistent with heroin addiction. The bruises were both recent and old. Yes, some due to a fall, but many consistent with what appeared to be beatings. So I'm just going to cut in here. It's a description of this dead man. He's been called by this Somali doctor, Dr. Salma Blair. As I mentioned before, they find her body, her brother's body, dead in an alley, and the police write it off as a suicide, an overdose due to heroin, either suicide or an overdose. The woman, the doctor, refuses to agree to believe this. Because she's a doctor, she knows another medical examiner who gives contradictory report to the official medical exam, and that's why she's hired Alec Knight to come in. And now he's dealing with the on-site coroner. I called up the city. The city coroner demurred. He told me how much he respected Paul Leong Kung's opinion, but Barr was a drunk and into drugs, soft and hard. He was of the opinion that the heroin injection was self-inflicted, and Barr killed himself with an overdose of smack. Mike Barr didn't need other people's assistance. He had his own miscalculation on his side. I phoned up Lieutenant Warnock of the city police. 10 minutes, Knight, and 10 minutes is what I mean. You're like a mouse nibbling into my cheese sandwich. It can give me indigestion, and my doctor says it's not good for my liver, kidneys, gut, and spleen. It's this bar case. You're down to 1 minute. The coroner closed it. Death by overdose. Crown doesn't want to touch it. Well, the sister, Dr. Salma Barr, was here and asked me to take it up. You're wasting your time, Knight. The guy was a fuck-up. He was a lush and a soft junkie moving from soft to hard shit. He couldn't straighten out. He had every chance, but he blew him. He was always getting into small hassles on the street with the toughs and pushers. They'd wipe him out and he'd come back for more. They beat him up? plenty of times, but he kept coming back for more punishment. Will ever press charges for the assaults on Barr? Tried, but couldn't get any witnesses who would go to the stand. No one? Nope. But it's not what the sister thinks. It was never a racial thing between Barr and the Tufts. It was the bruised running up against the bruiser. Barr's death wasn't racist like the media's pumping it. You sure? Very. Barr was busted twice, once for pushing chat. Come again? Chat. You know, chat or quat. Only by name, fill me in. It's got cathinone in it. It messes with your neurotransmitters. It's addictive. It has an amphetamine-like effect. It's a controlled substance. It's gone into the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act in the States. DEA had cathinone classified as a Schedule 4 substance, but it is now graded as a Schedule 1 narcotic. It's spreading in New York, Detroit, and Chicago, mostly chewed by Arabs and Africans, mostly from Yemen, Somalia, Ethiopia. It's illegal. The judge went soft on Mike Barr. The lawyer did the multicultural rap and tap dance before the bench. It was a swell performance. Big mistake. Well, maybe Barr needed a break on a first offense. Judge gave him a suspended sentence. 6 months in community time. I'm not into social work. The Somali community doesn't need this shit. Ask the Somali women. It's an economic drug and an economic drag.
Well, there get the various strands of immigrant life. And
yes, and I must say it's not easy, because it's quite interesting how he plays with the ideas, even the tone and the things that it's interesting how in dialogue he gets into a lot of back information about what the drug's history is, and he has to do it quite quickly because it's a lot of information. It's actually not easy to read, and that's a good thing. I'd have to rehearse it a little bit more to read it really, really well and do justice to what he's done. When you're following it in your brain, it's quite lovely, because you're moving forward as you do in a crime drama, and it's easy to read in that sense, but at the same time you're picking up a lot of information as well.
I found I went back and reread things because of that information.
Absolutely. And aspect of it. Yes, and it gets the intrigue, of course, builds up, and the connections get a bit more complicated as you move along, but he keeps us in there quite well.
Paces very fast.
Yes.
Thanks for coming in, Kamyar.
Thanks, Mort.
I've been speaking with Kamyar Chai. He's a Vancouver actor, producer, and playwright. His play, The Adventures of Ali and Ali and the Axes of Evil, has just been published by Talon Books. And Kamyar has been reading excerpts from Marwan Hassan's latest book called Lost Patent, and it's published by Common Redpoll Books in Ottawa.
You've been listening to Red Eye, a program produced by an alternative media collective in Vancouver, Canada. Red Eye broadcasts live every Saturday morning from 9 until noon and can be heard around the world at cooperadio.org.